Hi, this is John Stone from 10,000 Blades, and you're listening to WNHHLP 103.5 FM, streaming live at newhavenindependent.org. All the best of food and drink, a glass of wine, a smile, a wink. Don't have a cow, don't make a stink, it's Lucy in the kitchen sink.
Hey, New Haveners, and welcome back to another episode of Kitchen Sink. I'm your host, Lucy Gelman, and today I am super excited to be back in the studio with one of my favorite New Haveners, Nadine Nelson, who is a woman of many, many talents, among them many culinary talents. So Nadine, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. And today we're talking about two different things, both of which involve you. So the first is the James Beard dinner, which you participated in, and you were the first New Haven chef to participate in. So I want to start there, but then I also want to talk about cooking in the holiday season in a way that maybe is not just gabbing about food. But let's start with James Beard. So can you tell our listeners, first of all, what the dinner is all about?
So the dinner was a collaboration with the New York African Restaurant Week, which is actually 3 weeks and celebrates African restaurants all around New York. There's 54 countries in the continent, and there's a lot of different types of restaurants in New York. And so the whole 3 weeks is celebrating the cuisine from the diaspora and encouraging people to go and their specials. Just like we have New Haven Restaurant Week, there's specials. There was like pop-ups, and this was part of that.
And I think I like maybe knew on my peripheral radar that you were doing it at the time. So we should say this was in, was this in October?
It was in October.
It was
October,
October
7th.
And I think I maybe saw some photos of you putting food together. But then you reached out to me and said, like, hey, no one from New Haven's ever done this before. Let's talk about this. So what was the process by which people got connected with you?
So the producer of New York African Restaurant Week, we had met at an event in New York a bunch of years ago, and he wanted to work with me. And the timing was never right because I travel a lot. And then this year he contacted me in July. And so the timing was right. And then one of the things that they wanted me to help them with was producing some pop-ups and some curated events. And then also with their marketing and promotion. So I was asked to be part of the team. And I was very honored and very happy, and I was excited to cook Pan-African food and do my take on it.
And pop-ups, I know. So I know you've done some events in New Haven. I always think back to your Harvest Mandalas of Citywide Open Studios, I think last year in 2016. But what was your experience with pop-up events more broadly?
In general, just,
yeah.
Well, I've done a lot of pop-up events, and I think that, I like them cause it's based on like my personality. And a lot of people want me to cook, and I wouldn't really want to cook in a regular restaurant kind of environment, but I like to do it for a short period of time. So, and I like to do it around a story or like different clients or different, people that I'm collaborating with. I like to do it around something. So usually it's like seasonal, of course. But then usually there's some kind of story. So like for James Beard, I was the person who did the cocktail half an hour. So I began the dinner. So and it was like one of the first dinners, if not the first dinners on food from Africa with a whole lineup of African
chef. Continent. Yeah.
Yeah. So like Marcus Samuelson has cooked there. I think Marcus Samuelson has cooked there like 25 times, but, and I'm sure he's done different variations of Pan-African food, but I think this is with the probably highest concentration of chefs from actually the continent. Cause we had chefs that were from that came from Ghana, and chef came from Vancouver, who was from the Congo. So I don't know if they had that many chefs on all one bill. So the story that I wanted to create was that, being that the continent is so big and many people don't know about the cuisine, or they might only be familiar with maybe North African cuisine, I wanted to do a story of North, South, East, West, and Central. So there's five appetizers, and it represented the different parts of the continent.
And has that always been important to you as a cook and kind of in your cooking? Because I know on this show, and also on Babs Rolls Ivy's show on WNHH, Love Babs, Love Talk, you've talked about the importance of feeding people sort of diasporic foods, and also cooking them and talking about them, making your culinary centerpiece also a discussion piece.
Well, I think that that talking about foods from the African diaspora, there's an opportunity, because a lot of people haven't talked about foods from the Caribbean, from Latin America, from Africa, and you know, the influence of African cuisines and ingredients on the world. So I think that that's an opportunity. I've always been interested in that, because I have been a person who, I'm Jamaican, but I was born in Toronto and I was raised in Toronto. There's a lot of different people from different parts of the African diaspora in which I grew up with in Toronto. But then coming to America and being around African Americans, learning about the foods of the South and the connection of that food to the continent, but then the connection of that food to the Caribbean, and then seeing, you know, having friends who are from Honduras or from Puerto Rico. And, you know, like, we have a dish called rundown in Jamaica. So it's a coconut dish where the coconut milk is cooked down and it makes a creamy sauce. But then in Africa, they have a lot of coconut derived dishes. And in Puerto Rico or Dominican Republic, they have pescado de coco. And so, like, you see, like, the different ties, and that even though we might have traveled through our enslavement to different areas, we still have that connection to Africa in many ways, in a lot of different cuisines. And I think that that is really important to acknowledge and to celebrate and to tell more people about.
And when you were designing, so some people, you know, are in a tizzy if you tell them to cook dinner for 10 people. But when you were designing this massive menu of you know, yes, it's appetizers, but still you're cooking for a lot of people. And you were sort of a one woman army. So I know that you've told me before that you were supposed to have help, and for reasons that were sort of out of your control and out of their control, that didn't happen. And so when you were planning what you wanted to serve, what were you thinking about making? And then we'll get into the menu itself.
Well, like I said, I want to represent the continent really well. So that was really hard, because there's so many great dishes. I wanted to make sure that the food, since they were hors d'oeuvres and canapes, that they're supposed to look really pretty, so they're visually appealing. I wanted to make sure that the food was, like, at least half plant-based, because I think that that is really important. And even though I eat animal protein, I always say that I like to push vegetables and celebrate them and show people how to use them in different ways. And I think that also from the continent, a lot of people associate with meat and protein, but a lot of dishes are plant-based. And so I wanted to make sure that I showcased that.
Yeah. And so let's get into the menu itself.
Okay.
This is always my favorite part.
All right. So, I said that I was the non-African African on the team. So, like, obviously I'm Jamaican, I'm Black. I am, you know, Jamaicans came from the continent, but, I want to pay homage to the continent and the different regions, but then I also want to do my own versions of, African food. So, and do things that people might not be so typical. So I did a jollof rice sushi wrapped in collard greens and with a peanut dressing. I actually did a soy a soy orange dressing, and because there was a lot of peanuts on the menu, so I wanted to make sure there wasn't too many peanuts. But peanuts are, you know, very big thing in the continent. They're really healthy for you. So I wanted to showcase collard greens because they're associated with Africa and coming from Africa and bringing them to the New World. And jollof rice is always a point of debate. And so I wanted to do something different with the jollof rice, being that it was going to be an appetizer. So it had to be something in hand.
And
so,
as a point of debate, do you mean, so there are regional, there are, I was going to say thousands. I don't know if there are thousands, but there are at least tens of regional takes on jollof rice. Actually, Sever magazines just did this beautiful piece by a young woman about jollof rice and the rice that she grew up with, and then what she learned to cook kind of when she was doing experimental research for this. So is that what you mean by
So
sort of rice wars?
Yeah, rice wars. And so I think that, you know, in regard to the rice wars, like if it's like my opinion, like Debujen, which is the national dish of Senegal, is like where like the jollof rice is supposed to stem from. And so they have vegetables in there, which I really, really like. Mm-hmm. And they use like broken rice. And it's like one of my favorite dishes of all time, just like forever, not to mention just like African food, but one of my favorite dishes. I think that, you know, like Liberia, Ivory Coast, Ghana, Nigeria, a lot of these places, they have their own versions of jollof rice. I like vegetables in my jollof rice. A lot of people think that is blasphemy. other than that, then it's just like really a tomato and pepper dish. Like I learned some tricks to enhance the flavor, I think. I don't know if I'm supposed to, if you want to discuss them, but.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I want to. I mean, no, you don't have to expose your secrets, but okay. I want to know.
Well, being in the kitchen at James Beard with all these different chefs from the African diaspora, it was fun to see like how they cook different things. So like one of the things is making sure that you cook off the palm oil and you smoke it out so that the bitter taste goes away. I think that if you're a non-African cook, you probably don't know to do that. I think that I cooked with a Nigerian chef, and I cooked with her making her jollof rice several times, being her assistant, helping out with some of these pop-ups that were produced. And cooking off your onions, tomatoes, and peppers and broiling them to intensify the flavor. I saw her do that, and also then just put it in the blender and then put it on the stove and then cook it out some more. So I thought that was really nice to intensify the flavor and have like a sense of smokiness that broiling and roasting intensifies the sweetness of something. So I thought that was really cool. A lot of people don't necessarily probably know that Nigerians put a little bit of curry in their jollof rice. And I thought that was a nice addition. They put thyme. They might put a little bit of ginger. So I think those are some of the things that
I know learned. You're making me hungry.
Yeah, I'm hungry, yeah, too.
And then let's talk about some of the other appetizers.
So that was from West Africa. And then I did samosa naan bites with a cilantro chutney, which was to represent South and East Africa. There is an Indian influence throughout Africa because Indians came for trade, and so they brought their spices. So you have people, you know, making samosas. I want to do a variation of a samosa. So it was open, and it had potatoes and cauliflower and peas, and then it had a nice cilantro chutney to drizzle on there. I did a nantaba, which is a dish from the DRC, from the Congo, or formerly Zaire, grilled goat, and also grilled wild mushrooms that people might not realize that people forage and eat. And it had a mwabe sauce, which is usually cooked with chicken, but I used it as a side dish for this. So it was like grilled meat, which a lot of Central Africa, West Africa, like all over Africa actually does grilled meat. And then I did like a tomato peanut sauce, and then did a salmon kifo, which is usually done with meat, beef from Ethiopia. And I made injera crisps. So, you know, injera is kind of sour, but we bake them in little rounds, and then the salmon was on top. And it usually has like a berber sauce, like a really spicy sauce. And I put like some nice herbs in there. And then finally from Morocco, North Africa, a chicken kafka oasis. And so there's chicken meatball, and it was on a bed of hummus. And I make a really nice Moroccan carrot salad. So that was around it, with really nice microgreens. And so it was really pretty. And so that was like really important to me, that the food looked really beautiful and eye-catching. We had some really good cocktails.
Yeah.
My friends from New England Stillwater Farm and Distillery in Winchester, New Hampshire, they gave us a limited edition cucumber vodka, which I made into a drink called the Sankofa. It was watermelon, cucumber, vodka, and birds of paradise. And then I made another drink called the Terenga, which was hibiscus and rose, and a vanilla drink made with spiced rum. So
I'm just amazed. You just named enough work for 10 people, at least probably 20 people. And I know, Nadine, that the kitchen was small. It was very small. It was intimate.
It was tiny.
It was cozy. So how do you, when you get in a space like that, are you just in the zone totally?
Yeah, well, luckily I've been there a couple times, so I knew it was small. And if anyone wants to see what happens, you can go and see the archived live stream. And it's fun to see other chefs that you might admire if you can't go to one of the dinners. On the day of the dinners, they live stream them, and then they have it as an archive. And so that was really good for me to see. I watched a bunch of different dinners where there were menus that had multiple chefs. To see like how did the flow go. And I got in there really early. So I got there at 8 o'clock. So I would have enough time without a bunch of other chefs. And then we also had assistants that were really wonderful. They were from the ICE, from the CIA, and the Natural Gourmet Institute. So they were really, really helpful. And so they did a lot of the prep. And there was two of us that were in the kitchen for the majority of the day. And then we had three assistants at a time. And that was good, you know. And James Beard, they have people who do your dishes. They have people that, you know, get you things. So it was like really, I thought that I was going to have to do a lot more prep. And I was really surprised and happy.
So I want to remind listeners, if you're just joining us or if you've been hanging out with us here on WNHH, this is Kitchen Sink. We're on WNHHLP 103.5 FM New Haven. I'm Lucy Gelman, and I'm here with Nadine Nelson in the studio today talking about the James Beard dinner right now. And then we're going to get into some holiday sides, which I'm excited about. But Nadine, you know, one of the things I wonder about, New Haven has some really cool food stuff that goes on. Do you think we have the bandwidth in the city for a festival of this size and this caliber?
What kind of festival?
The African food festival, and then something like the James Beard dinner.
I do. I think that New Haven has a lot of food themes that have not been explored. You know, like I feel like, for instance, I don't know if I should share my ideas, but you know, if anyone wants to co-produce some of these events that I have had dreams of, like I think that it would be great to have like a tapas festival. Mm. There's so many restaurants that do really great small bites. I think that a taco festival down by the water where the taco trucks are like salsa and celebrating the Latino heritage and the pan Latinx heritage that is here in New Haven would be wonderful. I think that obviously like a Caribbean festival, that would be really good. There's a lot of people in Connecticut that are from the Caribbean who are especially from Jamaica. There's like a jerk festival in Bridgeport, and I think that we could definitely have one here in the New Haven area. I think that other aspects of Italian culture other than just pizza can be celebrated. So I think that there's a lot of things that that New Haven is known for, and especially like their ethnic food. I think that there's a lot of opportunity in which to use it as a draw to get people from other areas to patron and support the businesses in New Haven in general.
And I know at this dinner, you were the first New Haven chef. Is that correct?
I don't know. I think I am. Yeah, okay. I think I am.
What do you, because I know one thing that we have talked about is the number of chefs in New Haven who have, they sort of have the culinary bandwidth to do this. Do you think it's an issue of just sort of outreach and networking to get them into those similar spaces? Or do you, do you think there's interest there from those chefs?
Well, I think that, you know, like for me, I'm not a restaurant chef, and I think that it benefits a lot of restaurant chefs. I think that for myself, it's a little different. I think that some chefs don't necessarily want to do it because I think New Haven is a place where a lot of the chefs are very hands-on. You know, like Jason from Casey's, Bun from Mia's, Claire from Claire's, like they're very hands-on. Like, you know, you go into Sandra from Sandra's Next Generation, Steven from The Anchor, you go into those restaurants and you see people there. And so I think that it's a little different than other places where someone might be just the figurehead that, and they're not being hands-on in the kitchen, you know? So I think that it might be, I went to a chef in, his name is Michael, and his restaurant's called the Gypsy Bistro, and it's in Shelburne Falls. And he has a 5 rating, you know? And Sandra here has like a 5 rating for like reviews. And it's interesting how, so like, even though when people have like this rating, like the restaurants will be packed and everything, but then outside of their region, like the accolades. And I think that, you know, some chefs are very publicity minded and they want to go in that direction. And other chefs are very like, they want to have, the reason why they have a sense of consistency is like they're in the kitchen. So I think it really depends on the chef, and that it's really hard to be able to do both.
And what's your hope? I mean, are you hoping to return at some point, not specifically next year, but to this dinner, you know, and do it again? Would you like to do it again?
I would love to do my own version of a dinner. Mm. So I'd love to do a Caribbean themed dinner. And then I also would love to do a New Haven dinner. There's like many different things that one can do, like a seasonal dinner, you know, one on waste, you know, like my different themes that I do.
Oh, I love that idea of a New Haven dinner. It's like some house on, I don't know. I feel like there are mysterious old houses on like Grand that have wonderful history. Or even there's a house in East Rock on Orange Street that I think it's definitely haunted. Do you know what one I'm talking about?
No.
There was like, I think briefly Yale had it. And then before that, it, at one point it was either a convent or like there were nuns living there. But you pass it and it definitely looks haunted. It looks super haunted. But I love the idea of filling that space with light and with food and laughter.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think that there's a lot of room for activating space and doing placemaking. And like I said, like, you know, I think that a tapas festival where people do flamenco and using these really wonderful spaces that New Haven has, there's all these little small parks. And, you know, like doing, having done pop-ups in Boston and other places, I think that it does a lot for the economy. It does a lot for local businesses. And it does a lot for the town, because I think that New Haven gets a bad rap sometimes from people who are not from here, and that there's a lot of really interesting people and really great talent, and being able to showcase them in a different way. I think that it's really important for the next level of economic development in New Haven.
Mm, I would agree with that. So I want to switch gears a little bit, actually, and talk about the holidays, which are coming up. I don't know when that happened. it feels like it was just January or even last year, but this week marks the beginning of the Thanksgiving season. If you're hearing this week, this will probably play again after Thanksgiving. But for a lot of people, Thanksgiving sort of kicks off this, like, I don't know, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, solstice, and sometimes Ramadan, but not this year, Ramadan holiday season. And that goes right up until the 31st. And then there's like a huge letdown. And we can talk about that too, because that's an interesting thing that always catches me by surprise. But I want to talk about foods, because you and I ran into each other at a food entrepreneurship meetup, and we started talking about sides, and especially vegetable sides. And you gave me a ton of ideas just in that meeting. And so I'm wondering if we can inspire listeners to maybe think outside of the box and do something a little bit different between Thanksgiving and solstice, or what did they say on Seinfeld? A Festivus for the rest of us? Yeah. Whatever you celebrate around December 25th that may or may not be Christmas.
Okay. So I want to start off with a quote by Jessica Harris, who's a culinary historian and author. And I just love, she writes on the Pan-African diaspora, mm-hmm. and it's just amazing. So food traditions hold symbols and meaning that serve as a historical roadmap. So I just thought that was a really
great quote,
especially for Thanksgiving and people coming together, no matter like where they're from. It's like we create buffets of historical roadmaps, you know? So I'll start with like the things that I'm going to contribute. So I'm going to be not with my family this year. I'm going to be with one of my really good friends from college. And so I like to bring sides. And I think that being Jamaican, like, we're really big on meat and the proteins. And like, we only had a turkey up until recently, when I was just like, I kind of insisted on it because my daughter's half African American, and you know, like, I feel like, you know, it's Thanksgiving. I know that we're Jamaican, but we're in America, that we need to have a turkey. So I jerk our turkey. So it's really good. It's really flavorful. A lot of Jamaicans don't like turkey, but my turkey is very well seasoned, so that tastes really good.
How does one make jerk turkey?
Well, I usually brine it, and I use make a green seasoning, and I have a recipe online, and so I can give that to you after. You can put it online for them. So I usually make a green seasoning, which a lot of people from the Caribbean do. So it's like, green seasoning is onions, it might be scallions, different types of herbs, like thyme, usually parsley, could have cilantro, so different things. And you put that in the food processor or a blender with a little bit of olive oil, garlic, onion, like I said, and then you put that under the skin and season your turkey up with it. And then also I put jerk seasoning. So you can use dry jerk seasoning, you can use wet jerk seasoning, you can use homemade, you know, whatever you have available. And then you put that on to your liking. I usually say like 1 teaspoon to 1 tablespoon per pound, depending on how you like it spicy. And then I cook it in a bag to keep it moist. One of those
like
turkey
a foil,
bags.
Yeah.
One of those turkey bags. And so I start off at like 500 to get it brown, and then turn it down, and it comes out really moist. And I do cornbread stuffing with turkey sausage.
I don't even eat turkey, and this sounds good.
Yeah, it's really good. It's like when people say they don't like turkey, my family's like, oh, I don't like turkey. And they eat all of it. And it's like seasoned down. Like, I try and get one of those injectors to like really make sure that all the seasoning goes in it. And so I like sides because, like I said, like, we usually have a lot of, like, we have like curry goat and oxtail and different types of chicken and fried fish and steamed fish and a lot of things that Jamaicans and Caribbean people eat on their holidays. And we usually have rice and peas and a cooked vegetable and a salad. So I like to have like more sides than ever. So this year, I rotate my sides. I don't usually have the same sides. You know, we have the same vegetables because they're usually in season. So this year I'm doing a guava glazed curry carrots. So you use like either guava jam or guava paste and put curry, a little bit of olive oil, and then roast them. They're really tasty. So you have like that kind of savory sweet taste. Algerian green beans, which I like green beans, and you know, I don't we usually have like party potatoes, which have like cheese and sour cream and all that kind of stuff. So we don't want to have like traditional green bean casserole. So these are like a light version, and you steam the green beans just till they're green, and then you saute some garlic, a little bit of onion if you want to, and you saute some spices. So it's like a little paprika, a little bit of clove, some salt and pepper, and then you mix the green beans in there. So it's like really kind of unusual and tasty. I'm doing a whole roasted tandoori spice cauliflower. So ooh. So for people who are vegetarian, or it's not vegan because I put yogurt on there.
Yeah, and you described this to me, and it was, I'd kind of like peripherally heard about someone making this, but it sounded so good.
Yeah,
so I'm wondering if you can tell our listeners about it.
Yeah, so you use some you used yogurt, and then you use tandoori spice, or you can use curry if you want to, if you don't have tandoori spice, and put a little bit of paprika in there. But you can get it at the, you know, if you're here in Connecticut, on the Post Road, there's a bunch of Indian or Middle Eastern markets, but usually any supermarket has tandoori spice at this point. And then you mix it together. I put a little bit of olive oil in there. You might grate a little bit of garlic if you want to, and then you put it all, smear it all over the cauliflower, and then you cook it at high heat for around like 450 for around 25, 35 mm-hmm. minutes, and put a fork in there to make sure that it's cooked all the way through. But it looks really pretty when you bring it to the table, because a lot of people who are vegetarian feel like, here's a turkey and I don't really have anything for myself. Like if I feel ambitious, I might stuff pumpkins too, like with stuffing,
oh,
like
nice.
With a vegetable
and
stuffing.
And do you do savory, because I know we've talked about sweet potato casserole, which may be the only thing on which we really disagree. But I often feel, sometimes I'll go to Thanksgiving dinners and it's like the turkey and then the stuffing has turkey whatever in it. And so at the end of the day, what you're left with if you're a vegetarian are Brussels sprouts if they don't have bacon and sweet potatoes. And I love sweet potatoes, but then people mess with them.
You don't like them sweet?
No.
Yeah.
No, which, and I know you do. And I'm totally up for hearing a defense of them.
No, like, I mean, we usually make these party potatoes, which are really fattening and really good, you know? But if I, usually during, you know, I celebrate Christmas, I might make tropical potatoes au gratin, you know, or scalloped potatoes, where I'll use sweet potatoes and I'll use like different tropical tubers and just make it like scalloped potatoes, you know? And so that is a savory rendition. It tastes good, you know? But I just like sweet potatoes. I like them sweet.
Yeah.
I like the sugar.
The sweet potato casserole with like brown sugar. We had someone in our family who since passed away, but who made that every year. She would do the brown sugar or like a little bit of maple. And she would even put the little marshmallows on top.
Yeah.
The cute little marshmallows.
Yeah. I don't like marshmallows on my food.
And so, yeah.
I only like them for s'mores.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, a lot of people don't have fun with their side dishes and vegetables. And I think that, you know, like carrots, there's so many different things that you can do with carrots. You can do like harissa maple. You can make a Vietnamese dressing and put them on carrots. You can grate them and make a Moroccan salad with them. There's so many different things that you can do. You can make a pistachio vinaigrette with dill, for instance. You know, so I think that, you know, vegetables can be a canvas. And you know, a turkey, you can do it different ways. You can do like a mole turkey. You can do like a sofrito turkey. You can do lots of different ways culturally, but it's still like meat. And so I feel like with the vegetables, you can, it's like a really interesting canvas. Mm.
And then what are some other sides that you make, you know, outside of Thanksgiving? You talked a little bit about your affinity for collards at the James Beard dinner. And I do either people like it or they really don't, because people kind of fall both ways on collard greens. But I do a caramelized onion and collard stuffing that I really like. But some people don't like collards. So but do you make that part of your sort of holiday?
Well, I feel like collard greens. Yeah, I think that collard greens are like good luck, you know, like usually like you have them like the first year and you roll them up and it's supposed to be like dollars and everything. But I like collard greens and black eyed peas, you know, black eyed peas are also good luck. So but I just like them. And so like, I like to make black eyed peas outside of not only just for New Year's, but to make them for, you know, I make it into a salad that my family likes. I make it into a salsa and I have chips, you know, I'll make them with, I'll saute them, like I do a West African version. And then you put plantains in them.
What is a black eyed pea salsa like? Like I'm imagining almost like something that's more like a hummus if you ground them up. But
well, you can
mean
that
something
too.
Different?
I put tomatoes, pepper, just like the regular salsa, but I just use black eyed peas.
Oh, that
you know?
Sounds so good.
And then you asked me about the collard greens and I diverged.
Oh, yeah.
So I like my favorite way to make collard greens is Brazilian style. And so it's like you make a chiffonade with the collard greens. So that's rolling them up and then you cut them very, very thinly. You saute them with olive oil and garlic very fast. And so until they get bright green. So they're very easy to make. They're very fast. I like African-American style collard greens. I've never learned how to make them. Myself, I've tried and it's like they taste good, but they're not African American style. There is East African style called Sikamawiki where they do like tomatoes, onions. You can cook them with coconut milk, which is really good. So there's like a lot of different ways. I like them. A lot of people don't eat collard greens raw, but the same way I talked about making the Brazilian collard greens, chiffonading, you can make a salad, which I make a nice black eyed pea and collard green salad with a tamarind and peanut dressing. That's really good.
That sounds so good. And do you let them, because like, is it like kale where you have to let it soften a little bit?
Exactly. Yeah. And the tamarind is also kind of acidic. You know, and so usually I use lemon juice or orange juice, some kind of acid, you know, put a little bit of salt on there to break it down. Mm. But it tastes really good.
It sounds really good. What else? We haven't even talked about sweet stuff, but do you do sweet stuff too, other than sweet potatoes?
I usually only stick with the sweet potatoes. And I do that kind of the same way. Sometimes I'll do them where I do candied. Mm-hmm. I'm more a savory person. So the sweetest I get is like doing stuff with carrots. So we went over a whole bunch of stuff with carrots. I like to grill vegetables a lot. Mm. So like a lot of times I'll make grilled vegetables like zucchini, eggplant, that kind of stuff. And I'll put a sauce on there, like so charmoula, which is a Moroccan sauce. And that's made with like parsley and cilantro and garlic and olive oil. And it's like very bright. I like that. I like to, suya seasoning is a West African seasoning and it's from Nigeria. And they usually put it on meat, grilled meat, but it tastes really good on grilled vegetables. It tastes really good also with plantain. If you're frying plantain, you can sprinkle it on it. If you're baking plantain or roasting plantain, you can sprinkle the soya seasoning. And it's like ground peanuts, garlic powder, onion powder. It might have paprika, hot pepper, ground ginger. So it's kind of sweet, savory, and it's different, but it tastes really good. I like to do like a grilled corn with jerk seasoning and a little coconut.
And do you grill it on the cob and then do you cut it off the cob or do you just
leave it on the cob? And so I'll put a little bit of olive oil and a little bit of dry jerk seasoning, just a little bit of wet because that's a lot on, it's kind of overpowering for vegetable. And then at the end, sprinkle it with either dry coconut powder or dry coconut.
Well, that sounds so good. Sounds really good. And I want to remind listeners, if you're just joining us or if you've been hanging out with us, this is, excuse me, this is Kitchen Sink on WNHHLP 103.5 FM New Haven. We're streaming at www.newhavenindependent.org. I am Lucy Gelman. I almost forgot who I was in an existential sort of way, and I'm here with Nadine Nelson. We're talking about the James Beard dinner that's held in New York every year, and also holidays and holiday dishes. So as our time winds down, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about desserts. Is that something that you do, or is that something that someone else in your life does?
Yeah, I don't usually make desserts, but I do have some easy desserts that I do make.
Do you have a sweet tooth, or
I don't really.
Oh, you're above that. I'm so jealous.
No, it's not. I like sweets, but I don't. Yeah. I prefer savory. Like, if I'm going to save my calories, it's more going to be on the savory side. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't. I can only eat a little bit of sweet, then I get full. You know.
Yeah. But you said you have some easy.
Yes. So an easy recipe that one of my roommates, she was Haitian, she taught me, is it's usually like 3 apples or like 1 pound of hard fruit. Mm. So like apples, pears, mangoes, pineapples, something that's hearty that can break down. So just like an apple pie, you sprinkle a little bit of lemon juice and a little bit of, you know, apple pie spice or pumpkin spice, and you chop all of that stuff up, obviously, and then mix that stuff. And then the topping is 1 stick of butter, 1 cup of sugar, 1 egg, 1 cup of flour. And so you just keep on making the topping. If you have like 3 big apples, you might have to do it twice. But what you can do to add a little of your own flair is like you put vanilla in both things, but you can put almond extract or some sliced almonds in the topping. You can put ground hazelnuts, but you know, you can use it for peaches, like any type of fruit. So it's very seasonal, like just swap out the fruit, and that's easy. And you have it with vanilla ice cream and people love it.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Yeah. And if you want to in the crust, for instance, you can put a little bit of lavender if you want to get a little cute, stuff like that.
So. Oh, nice. Anything else?
Oh, I make a chocolate mousse. That's very easy. So you whip chocolate, you whip whipped cream, and you can do that in the food processor with your hand or with a mixer. And then you melt chocolate. I like to use Taza chocolate because Taza chocolate it's just very raw. It has like that kind of grittiness of unprocessed chocolate. A little bit of sugar. You can put like hazelnut extract or something like that if you want to. And then you melt your chocolate and then you mix it together. And so it's just very, very easy. It's just like very kind of very light. I don't put too much sugar in it. So it tastes really good.
Oh, that's nice.
Also like apple crisps. Like I do like pound cake. I do like very easy, like when you're 12-year-old, you know, like when, you know, those kind of foolproof like desserts.
Yeah, oh, totally.
I studied dessert in Paris at the Ritz Escoffier, and I wanted to do that because it's out of my comfort zone. But you have to have, I liken being a dessert chef to being a scientist. You know, you have to look at something and make sure like, oh, did I like put a cup of flour? And I like to just like freestyle it in the kitchen.
Well, and it almost sounds like it makes it, I don't know if you read David Leibowitz's blog or his cookbooks, but he says when you walk into a kitchen, like a commercial kitchen, you can always tell who's a dessert chef because they're shaking salt on their food. So it almost makes sense, kind of the switch from sweet to savory. Well, Nadine, do you have anything else that you want to say before we kind of sign off for now?
Well, people always say make something that you know on for people when they come over. But I always think it's very fun to make something that you've always wanted to make.
Ooh.
And make it so it's like kind of foolproof. Like some of these vegetable sides were very easy that I told people about. It's just, you know, you can grill some broccoli and throw some seasoning on there, like Brussels sprouts. Like I make blackened Brussels sprouts. It's like, you know, steaming them or roasting them and then finishing off with a little butter and like Cajun seasoning. They're delicious, you know. They don't have to, you know, if you want to try and make them vegan, you don't have to put butter. You can use olive oil and just the seasoning. You know, but I think that have some fun, have a little creativity. It's really good to have your standards that everyone likes. But I think that people like in my family, they look forward to seeing like the different things that I'm going to bring.
Awesome. Nadine, I want to thank you so much.
Thank you.
If people want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
GlobalLocalGourmet.com. You can always find me through there. You can contact me through there. My phone number is on there, all of that.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. And if you've been listening with us, thank you. This has been Kitchen Sink on WNHHLP 103.5 FM New Haven. I'm signing off. And as always, I wish you not only a happy holiday season with full bellies, but happy eating more generally.